Hello, I'm Jim Connell. This is number 0173, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0173. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, another visit from Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy. He's back to talk about all the latest findings on the Mars rover. It's actually analyzing the soil.
The rover has been scooping up samples of the soil, and it has a set of instruments on board. In fact, it's got a little oven on board that it's placed these scoops of soil inside. It bakes the soil in its oven on board, and there's trace gases that are let go.
Eric Papp is a leadership expert and author of Leadership by Choice. He talks about some of the mistakes people make when sending emails.
Sometimes we say things and we do things in an email and also in text messages that we would not do in person. And I see that happening in terms of not just email, but I also see text. People will text certain things or they'll say certain things in a text message that they would never say to someone if that person were face-to-face. And I think it's just another way that you can kind of, you know, hide behind something in a sense.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Peter says the warm, fuzzy feeling story of a cop who bought a homeless guy's shoes isn't all it's cracked up to be.
He is not a homeless guy, okay? Never was and probably never will be. He's a veteran from the United States Army. He lives in military, or I should say veteran housing in the Bronx. That means he has an apartment. And his job is to sit within 50 feet of a shoe store without shoes on and without socks on. So people come along and give him money. And then he goes home where he probably has more shoes than you do.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you that this was show number 0173 was Jim Connell, the automated control room director at Global Montreal for the new Global Montreal Morning Show. And no, that doesn't mean that Jim is automated. He's not a robot. He's the person who runs the automated control room. He's the director at Global Montreal for the new morning show, which goes on the air in January. He's also a very talented voice specialist, and you can check out his website at jimconnell.com. Connell is two N's, two L's. That's jimconnell.com. And thank you very much, Jim, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. A program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, if you're ripped off by a drug dealer or a sex worker, you pretty much are on your own, a lesson one guy learned the hard way. On March 25th, Scott Pfeiffer, age 34, told cops in Portsmouth, Maine, that a prostitute shorted him 10 minutes. This according to Sergeant Gerald Hamilton. Now, Hamilton said Pfeiffer complained that the woman, quote, did not give him or give me my money's worth. Police responded by launching an investigation and eventually placed him and two alleged prostitutes under arrest. Pfeiffer has been charged with engaging a prostitute. Turns out sex workers have been complaining about Pfeiffer too. Two sites where escorts share information, National Blacklist and Bad Boy Client, listed complaints about him. One calls him notorious for booking out calls and then not answering his door or phone. Now, bet you didn't know hookers had a complaint site online. In fact, more than one. Hooking in the 21st century. There you go. A Ukrainian man is giving people the chance to lie down in a coffin to prepare themselves for the afterlife. Stefan Pirianyuk, who has been making coffins for more than a decade, calls his new service coffin therapy. It gives people the chance to lie inside a casket for approximately 15 minutes. Putting the lid on is optional. Stefan explained, when you lay in a coffin, it feels just like a bed. It's the same sheets, the same pillow. A wooden coffin has its own aura inside. The businessman set a room up for his customers with several empty coffins to choose from. Clients can recline as a soundtrack of bird song and waterfalling plays in the background. One 51-year-old woman, she said, after a hard working day, you can come in and just relax. It's great. You go home in a completely different mood. Hey, maybe you're just giddy over the fact that you get to get up and leave the coffin and go home, but whatever floats your boat, my dear, whatever floats your boat. Well, 'tis the season. Organizers of the Lowe's Toronto Christmas Market apologized online to a family who said their Santa had insulted a 3-year-old boy. A wisecracking bad Santa is now unemployed after the jolly old elf insulted a 3-year-old boy about his plaid coat and Leafs toque. Mary Trent said she was shocked by the behavior of the Lowe's Toronto Christmas Market Santa Claus in the Distillery District as her son, who was first in line to visit him, approached him. After Santa arrived a half hour late, he proceeded to insult the boy's red plaid coat. The first thing he tells my son is, "Oh, you look like Paul Bunyan." She said, "Really? Is that appropriate?" Then he said, "Oh, you're wearing a Toronto Maple Leafs toque. You shouldn't be wearing that. They suck." At that point, I took my son and told him we should go. Santa isn't being very good today. Trent said her son was inconsolable and cried all the way home to Mississauga, Ontario. Okay. Not that I want to defend the Santa, because he did cross the line a bit. I mean, I would have fired him for having been a half hour late. But saying the kid in red plaid is Paul Bunyan isn't an insult. That's a compliment. Who doesn't like Paul Bunyan? Now, where he crossed the line was saying the kid shouldn't wear a Leaf toque. He shouldn't tell the kid that the Leafs suck. Oh, they do suck. But you shouldn't tell the kid that. That's all I'm saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, firefighters came to the rescue after a squirrel burying his nuts managed to get his head stuck in a manhole cover. Concerned passersby called the fire brigade when they spotted the distressed rodent trapped in the middle of the street in Munich, Germany, as cars thundered by. Firefighters and vets eventually freed the squirrel, usually one of nature's great escape artists, with special metal cutting equipment after an attempt to ease him out with soapy water failed. Now, apart from being a bit grumpy, which is understandable, he was fine and ran straight up the nearest tree, said the fire service spokesperson. As it's autumn, we think he'd been looking for places to bury his nuts, but had taken a bit of a wrong turn. Anything I could possibly add to this story would be considered rude, so let's just simply move on, shall we? And get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program. Science writer Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, is back on the program to talk about space and science and share some of the scientific news he's been writing about lately. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Some of the news that's in the news is, to some people, not really news. People got very, very excited about what the scientists wanted to discuss when it came to the Mars rover, and they were excited about the science of it, but I guess the press were looking for more of a discovery and were a bit let down.
Yeah, I think people got so excited with this possible Mars discovery from the Curiosity rover the last few weeks before the announcement. I think people were expecting maybe it'd find a bone or something on Mars. But, you know, it was a letdown to some people. But for real space geeks, I think it's heartening in the sense of we're on the trail of finding evidence of life.
Okay, so what exactly was the announcement? What, if anything, was found?
So basically what this one-ton rover has been doing in the first 4 months of its 2-year mission is to search the habitat of Mars to see if it was ever conducive for life. So was it a habitable environment at any point in time on Mars. They can't actually discover life, but maybe the traces of life and the compounds that may be inferred as being important to life. So the rover has been scooping up, in the first few weeks of it being on Mars, samples of the soil that's around it. And it has a set of instruments on board. In fact, it's got a little oven on board that it's placed these scoops of soil inside. It bakes this soil in its oven on board, and there's trace gases that are let go.
Okay, well, first of all, you say it bakes the soil. So at what temperature, and normally, what is the surface temperature of Mars?
Well, the surface temperature on Mars can fluctuate anywhere from -150 to +20 degrees Celsius. So it varies depending on the season and where you are geographically on Mars. If you're near the equator, it's a little bit warmer. If you're near the poles of Mars, it's colder. This mission is closer to the equator, so it's not exactly the coldest part of Mars. But it, you know, relatively speaking, the surface temperatures there are around -30-40 degrees on average. Now, the temperatures in the oven can go up to hundreds of degrees, and it actually bakes this soil so that it starts releasing gases. And the rover is able to actually analyze those gases to see if there's any interesting things in there, like, for instance, methane, which is an indicator of life. So what the announcement particularly here that NASA has made is deals with one of these soil samples that it has baked, and it's detected simple carbon-based organic compounds on Mars. But what remains really unclear at this point is whether they were formed on the planet itself. It's something indigenous to Mars, or is it something that's an earthly contamination that might have existed within the oven? That's what the instruments are detecting. So
isn't there also a third possibility that it is not something that is indigenous to Mars but didn't come from Earth by based on contamination, but could it have been something that landed hit Mars, like a meteor or something that hit Mars? So in other words, it's from someplace else.
Well, it's unlikely because similar organics have been found in other places on Mars, and most recently by the Phoenix lander in 2007, which landed near the northern part of Mars, northern pole of Mars. And it actually had also a little robotic arm that scooped up a sample and found the similar type of organic compounds. And in fact, this specific one is called a perchlorate compound, which is basically oxygen and chlorine bound together in a molecule. And it's a very it seems to be something that's very common on Mars because it's in very different locations and it seems to exist everywhere. So it's most likely something that's indigenous to the planet. It doesn't necessarily mean that life exists now or has ever existed on Mars. That's the fact. It makes the possibility of Martian life, you know, maybe really a long time ago, millions or billions of years ago in Mars past, when it was wet and warmer, I guess it makes the case somewhat greater, since the available like carbon compounds that it's finding there is considered to be so important in the biology as we understand it.
If it is signs that there may have been life on the planet at one point, could this, and we're going back billions of years again, we preface this, could this be the harbinger of what is in store for the planet that we're on? In other words, is it possible that Mars was more Earth-like at some point in its past?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I think so intriguing about the Red Planet is that there's a lot of signs on Mars that are pointing to the fact that it was a warmer, wetter planet, much more like Earth. It had a thicker atmosphere. Water actually could flow on the surface. It can't do that now because the atmosphere is way too thin, 1/1000th as thick as the Earth is. And It doesn't have a magnetic field, but all the signs are that it did have a magnetic field billions of years ago. Water channels look like big, huge canyons carved from flowing water existed. We've found water ice a few feet underneath the soil already through Mars, the Phoenix lander, like I mentioned a few years ago. So all the indications are that it was once much more like Earth. The question is, what happened to Mars? What went wrong? Why has it become a cold, dry, barren world that we see today? There might still be life, mind you, underneath the soil, maybe a few feet or, you know, a mile underneath the ground. There could be caverns with that life could still be living, maybe, you know, microbial life of some sort. But right now, it looks like the surface is pretty sterile. Something went wrong with Mars. It lost its magnetic field, too. We just don't know. There are huge questions here. And yes, Peter, it could very well be very important to understand what happened on Mars so that we can figure out, you know, what could happen to the Earth as well and what we need to be careful of. And with climate change and all the talk about that, it makes it all that much more important.
Okay, well, let me go with another theory then. If the red planet, if Mars was more Earth-like billions of years ago, can we extrapolate in any way, shape, or form what Earth was like at that same time? In other words, if Mars was a hotter, more hospitable planet, what was the temperature like here at that time?
Well, you know, that's a good question too, because, you know, we are just starting to understand that what the earliest Earth may have looked like when Earth was young. And we're talking about 4.5 billion years ago when all the planets formed in the solar system. And Earth is in a very stable orbit, as is Mars. And we think that both planets probably were in the similar type of orbits for billions of years in the past. But Earth is in a very special place. It's what astronomers call the Goldilocks zone. It's not too hot and it's not too cold, especially in terms of water, H2O, being in a liquid form, which we need for life to evolve. So Earth seems to be in a real sweet spot in terms of having an environment, a planetary environment, that is conducive to life.
But that
Mars
is
may have been just at the edge of that habitable zone, the Goldilocks zone, and was a little bit too volatile for it to actually survive.
But that is my question, and that is, is the sweet spot that we are supposedly in, was it always so sweet, is what I'm getting at.
I think so. I think, you know, Earth has been very lucky in where it is positioned. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, planet hunters are finding other solar systems out there, planetary systems with sun-like stars that show that other planets are existing in this sweet spot as well. Earth isn't a unique loner. It's not a rogue. There's many other planets out there around other stars that seem to be in this Goldilocks zone. That's what's exciting astronomers so much, that the conditions needed for life on a planet may not be unique to Earth. Mars may have once had it, but it was too volatile. It didn't survive. Those conditions didn't survive. But Earth is lucky in that it is in the right spot. And we're finding other planets out there do exist in the Goldilocks zone as well. So it should be very interesting. I wouldn't be surprised within the next few years we'll find an Earth analog, a sister Earth out there in the cosmos.
Excellent. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. We're just about out of time, and we only got to talk about Mars. Didn't even get to talk about the fact that more Mars missions are planned in the future. Maybe we can talk about that on a future program. Andrew, it's always a pleasure to have you on. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is thenightskyguy.com, correct?
That's right. People can also check out my YouTube channel, The Night Sky Guy, for latest updates of what's happening in the world of astronomy.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, the Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about email etiquette. Plus, we have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. But first, we have more Stuff File news for you on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. And if you haven't experienced Stitcher Smart Radio, what are you rating for? You know, you can get on-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone or any mobile device that you have. The latest episode of this program, Stuff File program, and also more than 10,000 other shows is always available to you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available on your iPhone, iPad, Android phones, and beyond. Like I said, just about any mobile device you have. Downloading is easy. Just go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store, and it's absolutely free. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now, to the Stuff File news. A burglar may have thought that he had an easy mark when he broke into the home of Edwin Dowdy, age 83, and his wife, Yuta, age 76, of Kenmore, Queensland, Australia. Now, the intruder, described as a muscular man in his 30s, was no match for the Dowdies, who were both black belts in Aikido. Yes. Edwin told the man he had a knife and to leave, but the man rushed him instead and ran into the knife. He grabbed Yuta's purse and left a trail of blood as he fled, police say. He then tried to break into a car down the street to get away, but failed at that too. Still, he escaped. Escaped capture, perhaps. Escaped punishment? Not a bit. And on to our next story. A woman in Auckland Flower, Queensland, Australia, still with Australia, called police after a burglar broke into her home and stole her purse, money, and her cell phone. As she reported the crime, she was able to tell investigators exactly where the thief was. She used the Find My Phone app to track it. As she directed officers to the man, he ran, but they were able to catch up to and subdue Anthony Andrew Mason, age 34. In addition to the cell phone theft, investigators tied him to a number of other burglaries, including one where, an elderly couple was able to fend him off thanks to having black belts in Aikido. What are the odds of that, huh? What are the odds? In court, a reporter noted Mason was still sporting a nasty but healing cut on his left forearm. Mason is charged with 6 burglaries so far, allegedly to support a heroin habit. Okay. Need to outsmart a heroin addict? Yeah. There's an app for that, apparently. Dude, you ran into a knife, came face to face with a black belt couple who were legal drinking age at the end of the last World War, and you were thwarted in crime by a cell phone app. People usually only accept rehab when they've hit rock bottom, but pal, you're already there. I mean, you're beginning to tunnel now. It's sad. It's really sad. Okay, here's the next story. Pay close attention to all the information. At 1:08 a.m. on November 4th, Niles Gammons of Urbana, Ohio, was arrested for operating a vehicle while intoxicated. Sergeant David Reese observed Gammons allegedly driving the wrong way down a one-way alley. According to the police report, Gammons had a small amount of marijuana and a blood alcohol content above the legal limit. He was cited for OVI, obstructing official business, and minor misdemeanor drug abuse. His license was suspended, he was ordered to appear in court, and was released to a responsible party. Later, at 1:08 a.m. on November 4th, Sergeant Reese saw Gammon's vehicle back up suddenly from a parking spot, nearly colliding with his police cruiser. Reese pulled the car over and saw Gammons was driving. According to the next police report, Gammons admitted that he knew he was under suspension from his previous arrest. He was issued a new citation for OVI and again ordered to appear. And yes, if you were paying close attention as I was reading that story, you will note that the times are correct. I did not make a mistake. I said 1:08 both times. You see, the first incident happened in the minutes before daylight savings time ended, and the second one happened exactly an hour later, minutes after standard time had started. Again, what are the odds? Wasn't Bill Murray in a movie that started this way? Anyway, one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Brian C. Dickerson, age 42, of Hurricane, West Virginia, was arrested after a state trooper determined his motor vehicle inspection sticker was fake, which is a felony in the state. I'm assuming it's a felony in any state. Dickerson allegedly admitted he made the sticker on his computer when the old one expired. Now, upon further examination of the registration, this trooper noticed that the license plate had been forged by having a false registration sticker, the lawman wrote in his report. After this trooper noticed the sticker was false, I began to remove the license plate, at which time Dickerson advised that he had made the license plate as well. Everything was forged. Yeah. Dickerson, the editor of the West Virginia Record, a newspaper sponsored by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Institute for Legal Reform, faces at least a year in prison. Now that's irony for you. A year in prison, which should be plenty of time to learn how to make more official-looking license plates. I'm just guessing. Okay, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Even though folks have been warned time and time again about the emails they send out, there are those who just don't listen. Recently, the undoing of General David Petraeus was in part to cyber trails of emails. So what are some of the do's and don'ts of online correspondence, especially in the business world? On the line with us right now is Eric Papp, who is a leadership expert and the author of Leadership by Choice. He joins us on the line from Florida. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Peter. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thanks for being on the show with us. So not everything is so dire as the situation that General Petraeus found himself in, but there are some do's and don'ts when it comes to dealing with emails. Why do you think it is that people just don't get it? Because you see this time and time again.
Peter, that's a good question. I think it goes with our thought process, and sometimes we say things and we do things in an email and also in text messages that we would not do in person. And I see that happening in terms of not just email, but I also see texting, as people will text certain things or they'll say certain things in a text message that they would never say to someone if that person were face to face. And I think it's just another way that you can kind of, hide behind something in a sense.
Isn't it also part of the problem, the fact that it's so instant? I mean, back in the day, someone would write a letter. You'd write the letter, mm-hmm. You'd look over the letter. Nowadays, people can just start typing things either in an email or a text message and hit send without really thinking what it is they just sent.
That's correct. And sometimes we just fire off emails, just like you said, Peter, in terms of not even really giving much thought to it, or really not even checking our grammar, or not even checking if we were, emotionally involved in that email, or if we, said some things we later on would regret. So the little just case in point to remember is that if you put something in an email and it might end up on the front page of your corporate newspaper or of your local newspaper, then you kind of think twice about sending it.
The other thing, too, is even if you're sure of what you want to say to the person you want to say it to, there's also the misconception people have that emails are private.
Mm. Correct. And we see that often, just here with the latest one with the general, but we've seen those with others as well, is that somehow these emails come out. Somehow they get exposed. And who knows how they come out, but if the former director of the CIA, if his emails, his Gmail account got tapped and came out, then I think they could, people can access our emails as well.
So, as I said in the introduction, there are do's and don'ts. What do you think some of the biggest do's are, and conversely, some of the biggest don'ts?
Well, start off right out of the gate. The two biggest do's in email that I see a lot are being clear and being concise. Being clear and remembering that any form of communication, whether it's texting, email, a phone call, face-to-face, one of the most important takeaways is the message. So being clear upon your message. What is it that you're trying to get across? Are you asking a question to somebody in an email? Are you trying to solicit their response in an email? What is it that you're, what is it, why, and why is it that you're putting this together? Be concise. People are getting an abundance of emails today. I talk to people on average, I usually get about 70 to 80 a day. So nobody's asking and wants more emails. So the more concise you will be, the greater chance that somebody's going to respond to your emails.
Is there a fine line between being friendly or being too formal in your email correspondence?
There can be. And that goes with Peter knowing who is going to be the recipient of your email. If it's a friend and if it's a casual acquaintance or something of that nature, then I'm sure you could just be a little bit more informal. I don't really have to worry about your grammar. But if it's a potential client or if it's an existing client or somebody that you're really going to be on top of it, and you want to, in terms of, see your grammar and your spelling and to make sure that you're on point.
Now, I introduced you as a leadership expert and the author of Leadership by Choice. I get the impression that you have the opportunity to spend a lot of time talking to people, talking to groups. You are a professional speaker. Even before the General Petraeus story broke in the news, was emails something that people asked a lot of questions about or you spent a lot of time dealing with when talking to people?
Yes. And even before that, that's correct. And the idea is because it's such a large part of communication. Communication is a large part of leadership, so they both go hand in hand. And email always comes up, whether it's the communication standpoint and being clear and being concise, but also whether it's a productivity standpoint. I also find that people are not as effective with their time because they spend so much time checking their emails.
Tell me a little bit about the book, Leadership by Choice. Who's your prime audience, the prime target you're going after with your book, Leadership by Choice?
Leadership by Choice, Peter, is for anyone that wants to develop themselves as a leader. And I call it as a choice because I believe it's a choice. It's not the title that you hold or it's not the position that you've been granted, but it's making a conscious decision to lead positively and effectively. And the subtitle is Increasing Influence and Effectiveness Through Self-Management, which I believe is the future of leadership. That is leadership through self-management. And the book has the four areas, communication and email. We touched on that today. Productivity, and that's with organization and delegation, how effective you are in getting people to accomplish goals. And then leading teams, that's talking about trust and how well to establish trust with other people and healthy conflict. And then the fourth area is personal development, and that is working on yourself and constantly improving.
The attributes that you describe in the book, are they even more important in this 21st century business world than it was, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Absolutely. From the fact that the world is smaller. It's a much smaller place. We see how jobs are being outsourced. We see how competition is increasingly it's going up in every industry. So the idea is to have folks that can manage themselves so that as a business owner or whomever, that you can lead them to where you want to take them. But having them manage themselves in the four areas, and then you can kind of put forth your direction, your vision, and you can accomplish that.
Getting back to the email situation for a moment, with the knowledge that you have from being a leadership expert and the author of Leadership by Choice, I know the horse is out of the barn in this case, but if General David Petraeus, the former general, came to you, what's the most important piece of advice you'd want to give him right about now?
So this is after the fact that he came.
Yep.
That he came,
this
right?
is after the
okay.
fact.
I would say something like this. When you tell a lie, it becomes part of your future. But when you tell the truth, it becomes part of your past. So
good.
Making sure that everything is out there, making sure that he doesn't hide anything or have anything else that still could be lingering.
Excellent advice. The book, again, is Leadership by Choice. It's written by Eric Papp. And I believe people can go to your website, which is ericpapp.com, and that's Papp with two P's, correct?
That's correct. And they can get, Peter, two free chapters. They can download the book, two free chapters, Leadership by Choice.
Excellent. That's the website, ericpapp.com. And Eric, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Peter.
Eric Papp, author of Leadership by Choice. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0173, and you'll find links to his site. You'll also find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Here's a case in which freedom of speech met the freedom to sue, and where the freedom to make a big mistake prevailed. It started with some negative comments posted on a website that allows customers to review businesses. A moving company was criticized for damaging some items of a customer. Compared to many reviews on the internet, it was pretty mild, but the business didn't like it, and it reacted by doing something it would later regret. It threatened to sue the person who wrote the review. The person being threatened didn't back down, though. Instead, her husband posted the business's lawsuit threat on his blog. And after the story spread to some very popular websites, the business received major backlash from potential customers. Eventually, it backed down from its threat to sue. Let's be fair, defamation is a serious crime. But in the internet age, threatening to sue someone who says things you simply don't like can do even more harm to your reputation. Find out more about the hidden costs of lawsuits. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do go to New York City once again. Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, is in our midst. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Let me just see if I can find my shoes and my socks. I've been walking around barefoot all day.
Actually, I wanted to talk about that story. Everyone is talking about the story of the police officer who had his picture taken helping a homeless man by giving him a pair of shoes. You have the inside scoop, it seems to be, as you always do.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, if your listeners want to know what's going on, they better take out a pencil and a paper because pad, because this is going to get very complicated, and I'll try to explain it as best as I can. First of all, keeping with the fact that I've been a street person in New York City for about 30 years, not to mention the fact that I've lived here all my life. I know this city. I know the cops. I know the bums. I know the crooks. I hate to tell you, I even know the prostitutes. All right, so I know the city. Number one, let's talk about this poor homeless guy. He is not a homeless guy, okay? Never was and probably never will be. He's a veteran from the United States Army. He lives in military, or I should say veteran housing in the Bronx. That means he has an apartment. And his job, just like you have a job to be a talk show host and I have a job to be a taxi driver, his job is to sit, oh, within 50 feet of a shoe store without shoes on and without socks on. So people come along and give him money. And then he goes home where he probably has more shoes than you do. Along comes this bouncing tourist from, of all places, Pinay County, Arizona. And I know from my own past experience that many, many tourists come to New York City looking for the bad. Because after all, they've seen the movies, they've seen the television and the media. And they will always ask me, can I show them homeless? Can I show them gangs? Can I show them prostitutes? They always want to see the bad stuff. And I point out to them, you know, I'm not working for the Chamber of Commerce, but most of that stuff just isn't really true. And that usually disappoints them. As a matter of fact, one of my signature lines is, if we see a homeless person on the streets of New York, I will stop the vehicle so that you can get out and have your picture taken with the person. So her intention in taking that picture, and I know it based on my own experience, was to take a picture of a homeless person so she could go back to Pinay County, Arizona, and tell everybody, look at what I saw. Oh, it's so bad in New York City. Little did she realize that when she took the picture, it would go, as they say, viral on the internet because of the cop being in the shot. Now, let's talk a little bit about this officer. He's very lucky that I'm not the police commissioner of New York City for a number of reasons.
Why is that?
First of all, he'd be fired or at least in discipline for not staying on his post. You don't just walk away from your post to go into a shoe store to do some private business. And to make matters worse, you don't put the arm on the shoe guy to sell you something for less money, no matter what the intended purpose is, because that's something the New York City Police Department discourages it. If you go into a diner, you're supposed to pay full price. If you go into a shoe store, you're supposed to pay full price. Doesn't make any difference what your reason is. You can have an old grandma, still doesn't make any difference. You don't get anything on the arm. And as a matter of fact, one of the oldest tricks that cops used to do, except they don't do it so much, is that they'll go into a diner, buy something, give you the counterman $5, and you'll give him the change. And what do you think the change is? Five single dollars. So the meal costs you absolutely nothing. So there you are. You got a little bit of a basic insight into what really went on. All a bunch of maloney. The media picked up on it so they could really have a field day. I tried to warn as many talk show hosts as I could not to do the story because you're going to look pretty stupid a few days later. And by the way, next day, the New York Times, much to my surprise, sends somebody back to check on the guy. And there he is in the street, same spot, no shoes and no socks. So the very clever Jimmy Olsen-type reporter says to him, where's the shoes and the socks? And this guy, just to show you how smart he is, says, the reason he doesn't have the shoes and socks on is because they were so nice, somebody would steal them from him. That's how fast he thought. Good answer. That's the kind of answer I would have given you. So there you are, my dear friend Peter, a whole bunch of baloney. And you got a cop tonight who was a big dope who didn't do his job, a wise guy tourist from Arizona who was looking to show New York in the worst possible light, and, of course, the main perpetrator, the phony homeless person. Now, what I've decided to do, because I'm a petty little man, did you know I'm a petty little man?
Never crossed my mind.
I've decided to attack Pinay County, Arizona, in any way that I can. So I wrote a blog, which people can see on my Gabby.com website, in which I point out that on their official picture for that county, the sheriff's department, and by the way, that tourist works for the sheriff's department. She's some 9/11 something or other. The sheriff's official picture is with him standing with his hand on his gun.
I've seen your blog, and I saw that picture. Yes.
And I want to ask you, what would happen if, I don't know if you have the equivalent in Canada of sheriffs in a town or a county, if the official picture on the website was the sheriff with his hand on his gun? It shows you what type of sweetness he must be. So all in all, I said, and this was irrational, they did dirty to my city, and, you know, there's nothing worse. They say there's nothing worse than a vengeful woman. There's nothing worse than a vengeful cabbie. I've urged everybody not to go to that county, not to do any business in it, now, which I know is irrational. But now, since you have a dog in this fight, having let me speak my piece, you can never go to Pinay County, Arizona.
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you think this story would have played any differently if it took place at any other time but December? You know, we're all looking for that happy Christmas, lovey-dovey, John Doe kind of feeling at this time of year.
Not we, white man. You come to think of it, you're not a white man. The fact of the matter is, I don't think you would have done it. I wouldn't have done it. I think it just is the time. Listen, everybody already hates the media, okay? You're going to be probably the last remaining loved media person in North America. But these people are sleazebags, and they do it, and they do it. And I don't even have to bring up what the two clowns in Australia just did. So, you know, it just shows that that's what the media does. And there hasn't been any kind of an apology for perpetrating this hoax. And just this week, by the way, I don't know if you're aware of it, but the New York Post ran a full-page picture on their front page of a man getting killed to death by a subway. And somebody, not me in this particular case, said, gee, maybe if the New York Post photographer had put down his camera, he might have been able to help the guy out of the tracks. But that's what the media does.
Yeah. Well, I've seen that guy interviewed, and he does have an answer. I don't know if you'd agree with it, but he maintains that he wouldn't have been able to get there in time to save the guy while he was taking the picture.
That's what I would maintain, too, if I had done such a stupid thing. But, I mean, there's a lot of other things. First of all, it's not a very unusual occurrence. Lots of people get killed in the New York City subway system. The motormen are a bunch of jockeys. They come roaring into the stations at 60 miles an hour, which they shouldn't. They should slow down. I mean, even in the real trains, when trains come to a real station, they usually slow down, you know. How'd you like that for sound effect?
Very nicely done. Okay. Well, we've certainly covered one topic all the time that we have. I do want to get to a couple other things, though. I want to talk a little bit about the cleanup surrounding, I don't want to call it hurricane, because it really wasn't a hurricane. It was a superstorm, Sandy. But anyway, what's the cleanup like in your neck of the woods?
Well, if you live in Manhattan and most parts of the city, it was just an economic, you know, really an economic mess. You weren't able to open your business. You weren't able to go to work. Maybe you had a little bit of a blackout. You know, it was an inconvenience. If you live in certain parts of Brooklyn and certain parts of Queens, right along the Atlantic Ocean, and anybody who wants to can take a look at a map and you'll see what I'm talking about, those people got screwed by the hurricane. But you can't really blame the hurricane. Now they're getting the... what would I call it? What was the one in New Orleans?
Katrina?
Yeah, the Katrina treatment. Same thing is happening. They're not getting money from the insurance companies. They're not getting the services from the city. They're just in a terrible, terrible state. And this kind of blows a hole in the idea that Bush was evil and somehow Bush hated the black people of New Orleans. I mean, you could turn that around now and say Obama is evil and he hates white people. I mean, you know, the media will do what they want with it. But the fact of the matter is, FEMA is certainly not doing what it should be doing. And I would say this to your nice listeners, because it's happened to myself and she who must be obeyed. Don't ever get yourself into a situation where you're at the mercy of your government.
Okay.
You can forget about it.
I got just about a minute, but I have to ask this question. $7 for a cup of coffee?
Not at my house. Yeah, that's going to be what Starbucks is going to be charging. And I guarantee you they'll get it, piece of cake. You got a lot of people who have more money than they know what to do. My recommendation is if you have an extra $7 in your pocket, go find a homeless person without shoes or socks and give it to him.
And that's how he brings it around full circle. Peter, I thank you very much for being on with us. I don't know if we're going to have a chance to talk between now and Christmas, but if not, best of the holidays to you. As you mentioned, people can check out your blog, which is at your website, which is at gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about in the home stretch in this edition of the Stuff File program. Of course, we have an idiot of the day, but we have a couple more Stuff File news stories to get to you before we get to that. We go to South Africa for our first story. Police in South Africa say they pulled over a preschool teacher who was found to have crammed 19 kids into her car for a trip to a shopping center. Pretoria police said Melanie Minnie, a faculty member at a nursery school, was pulled over in her Renault Clio, and officers found she was driving with 19 children, she was taking them back to the school from a local shopping center. Police said 3 children were in the front seat, 10 were in the back seat, and 6 were found riding in the trunk. It was unclear whether any of the children were wearing seatbelts. The woman told officers she had already ferried a carload of 10 children back to the school. "It was the first time we went on an outing and the last. I'll never do it again," Minnie told police. Minnie was fined about $160 for overloading her car. Just $160. I'm sure the parents were thrilled to hear this story. Yeah. I'm also surprised Minnie's still working. Melanie Minnie. It's a musical name. Anyway, elsewhere, an unnamed 17-year-old boy stole a scooter in Geraldton, Australia. Police gave chase, and the teenager crashed the scooter when he tried to jump a curb. Now, he fled on foot and hopped over a fence and landed on a trampoline on the other side. Sergeant Grant Rossman said the boy bounced back into the air and officers were able to catch him and pull him back over the fence. He was arrested and charged with 7 offenses, including drunk driving and not wearing a helmet. "I think it was one of those situations where you probably couldn't repeat it if you tried," Rossman said. "It was just fortunate for the police, but not for him. Everyone was positioned correctly there, and he just bounced right back into their arms." And now he gets to probably bounce around the prison system a little bit. And a woman came home from a hospital and found property worth $225 missing. She called her daughter, who admitted to stealing the cigarettes while her mother was being treated for emphysema-related problems. A Pima County, Arizona sheriff's deputy tried to get the daughter to return the loot. "Over my dead body, my mother is not getting the cigarettes back," the unnamed woman said. "If I have to go to jail over it, so be it." The daughter, who was indeed arrested, told the deputy she was trying to protect her mother's health, not to get the cigarettes for her own use. Mom's cigarettes were regular, and the daughter prefers menthols. Wait a minute, the daughter also smokes? Yeah. Maybe the mother will live long enough to steal her daughter's cigarettes when she has cancer. Anyway, you know what time it is, boys and girls? Yes, it's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
An alleged bank robber was arrested after she posted a video on YouTube claiming to have stolen more than $6,000 at gunpoint. In the bizarre YouTube video, Hannah Sabata, age 19, is seen fanning herself with a wad of cash that she said was stolen using a gun, a pillowcase, and a note. In a series of subtitles and handwritten notes, Sabata, from Stromsburg, Nebraska, also claimed to have stolen a Pontiac Grand Am during an alleged crime spree that she described as the best day of my life. The video entitled Chick Bank Robbery has been seen by more than 7,000 people on YouTube since it's been posted. Set to a backing track of Green Day song, Sabata poses with a large amount of money and holds up signs saying she is the victim of the government. Sabata said she planned to pay off student loans and go on a shopping spree. She shows the camera some keys and said her new car is shiny, but of course I already took the license plates off. Towards the end of the 7-minute video, she writes that her baby was taken away, but she can still find a purpose. Yeah, well, why would someone commit such crimes and then gleefully make a complete confession on YouTube for all the world, including cops and probably her own jury, to see? One reason, and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0173. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0173. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye!
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.